imagine the frustration of a computer user in a village. Oh, you don't have to. You already are one. The best connection is at the school, but school's out. You try to connect with a site only to discover it freezes up your computer because of some silly dancing advertisement. I'm Steve Heimel. The answer is broadband. We all know that. But how do we get there, and can we get there, and how much does it cost? Our number 1-800-478-8255-478-TALK, a local call in Anchorage, 550-8422, email talk at alaskapublic.org. We start exploring rural broadband connectivity today on Talk of Alaska statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
the Renewable Energy Alaska Project, celebrating 7 years of educating Alaskans on clean, local, sustainable, renewable energy. Find out more online at realaska.org.
And by
BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
And here we go. This is one of these situations where it requires a lot of information, more information than you could get on the radio if you spent a whole hour just delivering information. Obviously, we're going to have to come back to this issue and take some more bites of it, because there's a whole lot changing on this front. And if a new economic player comes into the state, like, for instance, let's say Verizon, it might just totally change everything, because it's already changed five or six times. And we have a panel today that's giving us some sketches of some of the stuff that is going on, but it's by no means comprehensive across the state. So I want to start with the new director of the University of Alaska Anchorage Institute of Social and Economic Research, Heather Hudson. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Heather.
Thank you very much. I'm really pleased to be here.
Heather, I wanted to start with you because you have a deeper background than anybody else sitting here, including me. And that's saying something. But you have been involved in, you came and went, but you were involved with the state and its telecommunications situation way back into the 70s.
Sure, and I think your point is well taken that, yes, there's change, but there are certainly trends that continue that, and which broadband is the latest example. And one is that people in Alaska were very clear that they wanted better communication in the 70s, and they were very willing to get organized and use whatever means were available then, and there were different projects and different organizations from now. But they used early NASA projects with telemedicine and then said, no, it's not okay just to have a project. We need phone service everywhere. They said, the state, you have a role to play in this. We're talking to the private sector, but they're saying, gee, there's no business model that serves these rural areas. And the state got very engaged. We put on a symposium about this in June and have quite a bit of material on our website. But I think the point is that broadband is the next step in people saying communication is really important to rural development in Alaska, and we all need to work together to make it happen.
But you know, what's different this time is that it's kind of wild and woolly. I guess the frontier is always kind of wild and woolly.
It was wild and woolly in this.
It was regulated, and it's very unregulated right now. And so there's nothing, for instance, to stop web providers to force them to provide a low bandwidth application for people that just have dial up. Doesn't exist. So you can have your computer for just try and do online banking, and all of a sudden your computer gets frozen up because of some silly dancing animated advertisement that they've sold time to.
Okay, but there's a flip side to that. You're right in the sense that internet services are not regulated because the idea was to get competition. What's really interesting about Alaska, among many things in communication, is that there is competition here, and competition, in fact, has worked in many ways, not everywhere, but has brought innovative providers into areas where the monopolies in the 70s said, we don't want to touch that, and only because they were forced to did they come in. And then sometimes if you're forced to do something, you don't really care about doing it too well. There's not the incentive. So we have new incentives. We also have subsidy programs that I think we'll talk about more later that help bring down the cost of access for community access for libraries and schools and for healthcare, and can affect the cost of what people pay just for other services. And those are really critical. And those came from the federal level. And it's not regulation, but it is. In a sense, it's policy. And it's policy that Alaska benefits from. We get about $12 back for every dollar you pay on those little charges on the bottom of your phone bill. That's what makes these services available and affordable where they are in Alaska and what we need to build on and protect and improve, as you say, because there are certainly glitches around.
Well, both of my panelists are on the edge of their seats already, but I got to go one more place with you, Heather, in setting the context, and that is universal service.
Right. A
number of the listeners right now are acquainted with being able to go to the school and get a high bandwidth, a broadband application at the school.
Mm-hmm.
And that is thanks to Universal Service Fund. So maybe you can explain how we got this E-rate.
Well, when there was legislative reform with the new Telecom Act in 1996, it only took about 50 years to get a new act. It said that services should be comparable in rural and urban areas, and that they should be accessible. That new services and advanced services was the term should be available everywhere. That led to some new policies that are implemented federally that provide discounts in Alaska. It's a long story, but for schools and libraries in rural Alaska, the discount is 90%. So the school districts or whoever pays, the libraries only pay 10%. For rural health care, the number is not quite so set in stone, but it works out pretty much the same if you're out in Bethel or Nome or Kotzebue for providing health care services. And then there's another pot of money called the High Cost Fund, which goes to the companies themselves because it's realized that providing service in rural areas is much more expensive, so that a person in Little Diomede doesn't have to pay, as one of my students in my communication course said, well, if they really pay what it costs, you know, people wouldn't be able to afford phone service there. So there's that kind of subsidy, too. And all of those are under review, and there's a lot of discussion about their future in Alaska. But I think people here recognize that keeping services affordable, as well as getting people the skills to use it, which is something else I want to come back to, because there's some other projects that aren't involved with infrastructure that are trying to help people get the training and develop the applications to put these infrastructure projects to use that you're about to hear about.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have to go there. There's no way we can't go there. But let's get back to the economics of it. I think there are probably some people listening to this program right now and saying, oh, my God, if Ted Stevens were alive here today, he would be solving this problem at this very moment. He's not. What has been doing more than anything else at this point, and I'm sorry, I just simply have to say it, is the federal government and stimulus funding. And the biggest stimulus project is one we're going to talk about right now. Jim Nordland is with the U.S. Department of Agriculture Office of Rural Development, and you basically were in charge of this project we're going to talk to GCI about here, right?
Yeah, Steve, thanks for having me on the show. I really appreciate it. And it's really interesting to hear Heather's perspective on the history of telecom in Alaska. I really appreciate hearing that. Our agency actually has a little bit of history as well. It goes back 75 years when Franklin Delano Roosevelt, during the middle of the Great Depression, and as part of the New Deal, decided that we should not leave rural America behind in terms of accessibility to electricity, and started the Rural Electrification Administration. That agency is the forerunner to our agency, or the USDA Rural Development Rural Utility Service. And this administration, the Obama administration, has stepped up to basically carry that same philosophy, let's not leave rural America or rural Alaska behind in terms of the digital divide, and try to bring the rest of the country on par with urban areas in terms of access to high-speed internet. So what we have done with the availability of stimulus funds, both through the Department of Commerce and through more specifically through our agency, the Department of Agriculture and Rural Development, is provide funding to help expand broadband availability to rural parts of the state. During the 2 years of the stimulus funding, we provided $145 million worth of grants and loans to make expansion into rural Alaska. And really, our flagship project is the one that's being built currently by GCI and their subsidiary UUI to expand broadband into both the Bristol Bay area and the YK Delta region. It's an $88 million project. Half of that was grant, and half of that's a loan that GCI needs to pay back. So we're very excited about that. I thought that I really appreciate the fact you're having this show right now, because, and I'll let Craig here talk about this, but GCI is doing in a sense, a ribbon cutting, groundbreaking ceremony in at the end of this month, and. So it's an acknowledgement, a celebration of the fact that pretty soon these communities in rural Alaska are going to have access to a terrestrial-based, a high-speed internet system.
Craig Johnson of GCI, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Thanks, Steve.
How you doing?
Good.
You're a very busy man.
Yes. Yes, it's a busy time right now at GCI with the project. As you can imagine, building a network of this magnitude is taking a lot of resources, and been one of the largest projects that GCI has undertaken in the history of the company.
No doubt about it. Now, let me, we have a map up on our website, which I noticed that the cloud computer has gotten cloudy again. So apparently you can't get on our website at the moment. But nonetheless, when you can, you'll be able to see this map here. I'll put it in the shot here, and this is impressive, and if you know your geography, it gets even more impressive, because you guys use the Williamsport Pile Bay Road, which basically takes off from the other side of Cook Inlet from Homer, and goes on to Lake Iliamna, and there actually is kind of a road there. I mean, they take trucks and heavy equipment on there, and you guys ran cable down there.
Yes. Yeah, that's one segment of the project. If I can take a minute, I can walk you kind of from east to west and give you an idea of the overall magnitude of what we're building.
All right. Before you do, though, I was bad-mouthing the website, and it's back on now.
Okay. So people can see a map that's up there, and then also we have a project website that's terra.gci.com that has a lot of information and construction pictures, video, and details on the project that that folks could look at. But as Jim mentioned, this project was funded by USDA Rural Utility Service back in January of 2010. Total cost of the project is $88 million.
And you guys had to get your ducks in a row, because there's constraints. Stimulus funding is stimulus, because it all has to get spent real quick.
Correct.
Were you in charge of that? Did you actually have to do all those logistics and everything?
Many people are in charge of the logistics in there. So we have
a military operation. It had to be.
Yes. A whole team of people and contractors that have been moving fast over the last year and a half to get this going. And you're right, it's a stimulus project, so it has a timeline. It has to be fully complete in 3 years and two-thirds complete within 2 years. So with those timelines and the limitations of the construction in rural Alaska, we really had to get the project ready for construction and build it this summer. So that's what we've been doing, is building it this summer and laying new fiber optic cable, over 400 total miles of new fiber optic coming from Homer over to Williamsport Pile Bay that you were mentioning before. So you have undersea fiber that goes from Homer over to the mountains, and then up through the mountain pass of Williamsport Pile Bay is fiber following that corridor. There's a road there and a mountain pass. And then dropping down into Lake Iliamna, you've got redundant cable that goes under Lake Iliamna. So it's put on the bottom of the lake and services those communities and provides a path out to Igiagig, where it becomes a land-buried fiber cable that actually we installed that portion from Igiagig to Leavelock, about 43 miles worth of underground cable was installed in the winter, this last winter, January through about March. It was a wintertime fiber bury so that we could cross the frozen tundra, and actually went under the river there and completed over in Leavelock. So a challenging aspect of it that was done during the winter months actually took an undersea diver, so a hard hat diver, a construction hard hat diver that went down under the Quechac River and basically walked this cable under the river, laid it on the lake, on the river bottom, and then came up on the other side, and then we continued to traverse over to Leevelock. So that gives you an idea of some of the challenges and uniqueness of this project, and how we're dealing with it.
And then basically there's towers and so forth that go up and get this thing all the way out to the Yukon Delta.
Yes.
All the way up the Kuskokwim River, a goodly ways, and inland in a number of different points, so that you're actually getting to a great many of the villages of the YK Delta.
Yes. So kind of bring back to what was existing out there in the Bethel area is our wholly owned subsidiary, United Utilities Incorporated, UUI. It's a local telephone company out there for Bethel and the surrounding communities. They had an existing microwave network that provided communication in region, so between Bethel and the villages outside of Bethel. And then, but all of that was continued to go up by satellite from Bethel. So you had a regional network there that this new microwave towers from Leevelock there, we're building a total of 13 new microwave towers that connects out to that existing UUI YK Delta network. So the 13 towers, those are all under construction, good ways towards completion. So you'll see new towers in communities like Leevelock and New Stoyahook, Ligonik, Ekwok. All of these have new towers that have microwave dishes hanging on the side of them and then provide the point-to-point communication that brings it all the way up into the YK Delta.
It's just amazing. I mean, I'm listening to this and thinking of the civil engineering, and it's comparable, not quite really, with the great railroads that were built to the Copper River, or the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. But you know, after that, you know, the Dew Line maybe. This is really something.
Yes. Yeah. You know, we're proud of it as an investment into rural Alaska. GCI has been providing telecom services statewide for a number of years. We've invested over $2 billion in infrastructure in the state, and this is just the next step to provide that terrestrial connection to a good number of communities, not all rural communities, but this project will service a total of 65 villages and regional centers.
So I'm sure it's not your department, but I'm kind of wondering the cost, and I'm sure Heather is too. Is there anything in the stimulus contract that limits what you can charge to your customers for this?
Sure. Well, the cost itself of the project is the $88 million that was
right.
We'll call it financed by
rural
utilities.
Then you've got
to
build it out, right?
Yep.
And you've got to pay back that 44.
Yep. So it was this was a national program that we competed against hundreds of applications. Jim could give an idea of there were billions and billions and billions of dollars of projects that were requested across all 50 states, and so we were proud to be able to secure this funding. And it was a complex application that goes through much like a bank financing. So it has the business plan in there, it has the projections, and so that RUS is providing those dollars to us, and then we repay the portion of the loan. So as far as providing new services, it'll be that backbone for all communications. So it'll be cellular communication, local telephone communication, and internet that'll come back through the new Terrace Southwest network.
I'm just thinking of somebody in a village that suddenly finds that they can buy a broadband service. Now, if I get cable modem GCI at my house, I like the broadband and I like the reliability of it, but it's costly.
Yep.
And this has gone down fiber, and then through Lord knows how many microwave lengths. And I'm just wondering, what am I going to have to pay, and what kind of bandwidth am I going to be able to get to pay what? Do you? I know it's not exactly your department, but maybe you can give me some idea.
No, definitely it's something that we've been communicating out to the villages and to people living in the service area. So the Terrace Southwest is what we call in the industry a middle mile project.
Right.
So if you can think about it, that this is the information highway out to Southwest Alaska. It's the first time that a highway has been built. Before this, it was all satellite connections. So in each village, there were satellite downlinks and that regional network out in the Delta area. So this provides that new middle mile capacity. What will be coming next is then to build the last mile into each one of the villages. So that will be a mix of wireless internet into homes and businesses that we'll be doing this next year in 2012. So you get, if you can imagine, we have to build the superhighway first and then the off ramps to each of the villages.
So you don't even get to recoup much revenue here for a while.
Next year we'll be building those that last mile piece, but right now it's that middle mile. And what we have committed in the application is that we will provide a broadband package to each of the 65 communities, so that it'll be a greater than 1.5 meg download speeds, so a good speed, good internet service at comparable urban rates, so somewhere in the neighborhood of $50 package, and then it would, and then you could buy more services like you can here in urban areas and where we provide other internet services.
Jim
Nordland. Yeah, Steve, if I might add, what we're doing here is an incredible amount of infrastructure to serve, really, in a sense, relatively not that many customers if you're, say, in an urban center. And that's one of the reasons why this was structured as $44 million of a loan, but also $44 million of grants. The service would have, in order for GCI or any other provider to recover their costs, if the whole thing was a loan, would be too high, probably, for an individual homeowner to pay. So that's the reason why it was a blend of half loan and half grant. It's basically a subsidy to be able to provide services to folks who live in a region where there, frankly, aren't that many people compared to a city.
I think there's another point worth adding and thinking about available services and possibly pricing, in that, as I mentioned, I've worked in many parts of the world where they say, well, you can't really do competition in rural and remote areas. But as I said, in Alaska, I think we've demonstrated that it can work. And so here's an investment in the middle mile. But if there was a local ISP or an outfit in the community or some of the small phone companies that the REA and RUS has supported in other parts of Alaska that wanted to connect, or another high-speed wireless operator, then they can lease bandwidth on this network. Now, the question still remains, at what price? And it's a good question that you raised. But the point is that it doesn't have to be only one provider and in many of these communities that can access and provide services once this network is in. And then the revenues are shared among them, and you're GCI colleague could tell you in a lot of detail how that would work. But the point is that the middle mile, as Craig was pointing out, gets the service close, and GCI provides one way to get into the communities. But other providers could also do that.
Oh, I see. So there could be other last mile providers.
Correct. Yeah, so it's a good point that Heather makes. It is a network that will be open to interconnection agreements with other providers in the region. So, and then also, the big users of this and where you see a lot of the benefits in rural Alaska is our customers of the health clinics, the hospitals, and the schools that are increasingly using broadband capabilities for distance education and for telemedicine. So some really exciting applications are going on, and we at GCI have many of those health clinics and those hospitals and schools as customers. And what we were seeing is, and continue to see, is the limitations of satellite. So the limitations of satellite, and as software programs are designed, as other applications are designed, they're not designed to work well over a satellite environment. So this will provide good benefits. It lowers the latency, so the time that the applications communicate back to the internet, and you really see some advanced things happening with the hospitals and the schools.
You cannot play an interactive video game over the satellite.
I
heard that delay.
Some
just
users
you.
That said, well, we actually do that sort of, doesn't work as well as we like. But I think it's worth pointing out too that there's kind of a comparable package of stimulus projects that are designed to get at the applications and training and usage, in addition to the infrastructure that the Rural Utilities Service is funding. There's a major project called Online with Libraries, because libraries are still a way that for many students and people doing adult education or people that want to come and do their their set up a website or do their online business. Schools and libraries and public access is important. So that project is putting in some conferencing facilities, but doing a lot of training. And there's another project with federal money from the National Telecom and Information Administration, Department of Commerce, kind of sister agency to the Rural Utility Service.
We in the broadcasting industry are well acquainted with the NTIA.
Yes, I'm sure you are. But that is working. It's called Bridging the E-Skills Gap, and the it's providing digital literacy and training to help with what I would call kind of the infomediary, because not everybody who wants to use the internet, some people can just get on and, as you say, start playing video games or doing whatever. Others say, well, you know, I'm trying to find out some information about this project that we're trying to, or funding we're trying to get for our community, or I want to know where else I could sell what I'm producing here. Can you help me? So that kind of support, which could be done by a librarian, as well as the technical support, how do I make all this stuff work? And how do I keep it working in my community if now I could subscribe myself, as you say, but I got a computer and what happens if I have a problem? And then there's another package of funding for planning and broadband planning and mapping in the state, which involves a state task force. It involves planning, mapping to figure out, well, what's out there now? Because the Fed said, well, you know, nice that we're supposed to be providing broadband throughout the country, but as many researchers pointed out to them, and the staff knew, we don't really know what's out there. So every state has to say, put together a map that says both here's what's out there now, and here's how we can make this map updatable in real time so that it's a living document, and each state has to develop the planning capacity to figure out, well, where do we go from here with broadband?
Heather, your timing is exquisite, because we're going to get an update on that shortly here on the program.
Just on one more point on the federal level, since the Federal Communications Commission, which administers these the broadband universal service funds and the universal service funds, and is looking at changing the policy, but they've also set up a National Native Broadband Task Force. And there are two Alaska Natives who are on that task force. One is Pearl Mikulski from Kowarik, and the other is Jim Williams from Tanana Chiefs. So that's a very new initiative for the FCC to really say, we want to hear from Native Americans about what problems they face, and we know that there are different problems, and we're hearing now that, you know, what people face in the Southwest is different from Alaska, is different from the Dakotas. So there's another voice at the table that's new from Alaska.
Well, I'm sure that Chairman's going to get an earful when he comes up here later this month for that ribbon cutter. What is this anyway, Craig? Is this going to be a ribbon cutter or a dedication or a groundbreaking? I mean, you guys already put the cable in.
Sure. Well, no, we're still constructing. So to clarify, we're still under construction. So it's a little beyond a groundbreaking, but not quite a ribbon cutting. So we're calling it a milestone event.
So you're not going
to expecting folks to attend.
You're not going to take the chairman of the FCC all the way across Cook Inlet or anything like that, are you?
No, we're having an event out in Dillingham later this month in coordination with Bristol Bay Health Corporation, and they'll be able to. The FCC and other folks will be able to see specific sites, look at the new towers out in the villages, look at a tower there in Dillingham, and get an update on the project. But just to clarify, you know, we're still under construction. The Lake Iliamna fiber, so in the lake itself, started here a couple of days ago. So they're out in Lake Iliamna right now, laying fiber. The Williamsport to Pyle Bay piece of the project, they're still putting fiber on poles and putting it underground in portions of that piece. And then the 13 microwave towers, two more are still to be put up here in the coming days, and the others are up, but still have a number of pieces that we have to put in place.
Craig, it's no wonder you're a hard man to get a hold of. It's Talk of Alaska. Our telephone number, 1-800-478-8255, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Email is talk@alaskapublic.org, and there's clients on every one of these channels here as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from First National Bank Alaska, working shoulder to shoulder with Alaskan businesses for nearly a century. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. Do you know a nonprofit executive or tribal leader who is at risk for job burnout? Nominate them for a Rasmussen Foundation sabbatical, which provides paid time away for personal renewal and growth. Go to Rasmussen.org for more information, but don't wait. Nominees must complete an application by October 1st. This message sponsored by the Rasmussen Foundation.
It's Talk of Alaska, and we're talking about broadband, and the idea is eventually there's commerce involved with this, not just education, not just communication, but commerce as well. And we've only really talked about the, so far, about the Agriculture Department and touched briefly on the Commerce Department's contribution to this. Now we're hearing it's maybe there's a little bit with the Bureau of Indian Affairs might get involved. And generally speaking, there's a whole lot of different, there's a bunch of different players in this broadband thing, not to mention the private sector. We've got Jim Nordland of the Department of Agriculture Office of Rural Development here. And this is, we've been talking about the Terra Southwest project, getting out to the YK Delta area and the Bristol Bay area. But there's more, right?
Well, yeah, Steve, I wanted to make sure that I, you know, before I left the show here today, that I really get something across. I think that's very important. We're calling a program within USDA to both build out and to build on. And what we mean by the build out is really what, you know, what GCI is doing to expand the physical network. We also, within USDA Rural Development, we do business lending. And that's where the build on part comes on.
Exactly what I wanted you to talk about.
Right. We want to make sure that now that the promise of closing the digital divide in rural Alaska has really come true, that people in rural Alaska are able to take advantage of this tremendous new resource that they have in creating really an opportunity to do small businesses in rural Alaska. That's really the motivation, I think, behind this. It's not really so much so people can access the internet for entertainment or in the schools and hospitals really have already, you know, in a sense, even though they've been on with a satellite, the service will improve. What we really want to do is emphasize the fact that there's an opportunity here now for people to live in rural Alaska, to improve their economy, to start a business, to keep those dollars that are normally being flowing out of rural communities in those communities by people doing businesses out of their homes because they have access to high-speed internet. So,
did you want to give it out some email address or something? Because I know there's a lot of proposals that are being cooked up right now by radio listeners all across the state of Alaska.
Well, I'll give my email address right now at US. It's jim.nordland, N-O-R-D-L-U-N-D, at ak.usda.gov. We have programs for both lending, and we do some grants to assist small businesses with developing, developing businesses in rural Alaska. That of course, there are other programs as well. SBA probably has programs, and some there's other agencies to do it as well. But I think the message I'm trying to deliver to listeners is, particularly that live in rural Alaska, is that pretty soon, if you live in the YK Delta, Bristol Bay area, you're going to have access at, you know, very close to your home, if not in your home eventually, to high-speed internet that allows you to really telework, to do work from home, to start a business from home, and to think about, you know, I can't think of all the ideas out there. Entrepreneurs think on their own, and they're able to come up with their own ideas, but to think about the fact that this access is going to be out there and, you know, to help improve the economy of rural Alaska by starting a small business there.
You know, I think about Bob Gillum and how he started his McKinley Investments by basically realizing that all he had to do was get a whole lot of computer power up here, and he could do day trading out of an office building in Midtown and beat out a whole bunch of other day traders. This is an amazing story, really. It's Talk of Alaska, and we're talking about broadband in rural Alaska, and we're joined now by Bill Popp of the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation. But in this case, Bill, I want to speak to you because you're chairman of the Governor's Task Force on Broadband Telecommunications. Welcome to the show, Bill.
It's a pleasure to be here.
And we had just a sort of a brief sketch of the fact that every state has to kind of do a map or a or a census or something, and I guess that's one of the tasks of this task force.
Well, it's actually a little bit more than a map. We are tasked with developing the state of Alaska's long-term broadband plan, and that plan has a lot of moving parts, and we're just really starting to get into this process. We've been at it for a few months now, and we're probably going to be at it for at least another year at the rate we're going to have to go in terms of the amount of depth and breadth of work that we're going to have to do. The task force is made up of community members from across the state of Alaska and representative of several different aspects of broadband as it currently exists and what it will be in the future, whether it's the providers and suppliers such as the major telecom as well as the regional and smaller telecom, or the community anchor groups and business representation that can include healthcare, education, the business community at large, those types of folks, as well as regulators and policymakers. Our job is to set a vision and then establish the goals that are going to we need to get to achieve that vision, and then develop the plan around that. And that would include everything from how we think delivery will be best done in the future, to the costs associated with that, to the opportunities that come with it that will drive a lot of the thinking in terms of the connectivity that's being spread out to every corner of the state. So our group so far has gotten some key baseline work done in terms of establishing the task force goal, which is to extend the full benefits of broadband technology to every Alaskan. And our purpose as a task force is to make it possible for every Alaskan to participate and be competitive in the global community, because this is focused around economic development as well as quality of life issues. And our vision is that by 2020, which is not that far away, that every Alaskan has 100 megabits per second broadband connectivity, which is basically, in layman's terms, a screaming hot connection.
Screaming hot.
There you go.
This one from Tyson outside of Fairbanks says, don't forget about those of us living in the greater Fairbanks area, though. I live 10 miles out of Fairbanks on the old Nanana Highway. Didn't have access to public broadband. The only service I had the ability to connect to was an old dial-up 56K. Mm-hmm. I ended up installing a satellite dish so I could pay a tremendous amount of money for subpar broadband that's apt to crash anytime it rains.
Well, those are exactly the issues we're trying to address. You know, when you talked about mapping earlier, one of the things that we are doing is working with the Connect Alaska group, which is part of the Connected Nation, or a nonprofit organization that's helping to make this all come together on behalf of the federal government. And the plan that we're working on will be incorporated eventually into the federal broadband plan as a nationwide component. Every state is doing this or has done it. And our overall goal is first to understand the need. So there's been a lot of work being done by Connect Alaska to understand and map broadband connectivity across the state at all levels.
So what is Connect Alaska?
Connect Alaska is a contract entity that is a subsidiary of the federal program, and their website is connectak.org. And you can go there and learn quite a bit about what they've been doing in terms of understanding the condition of connectivity in the state, where the infrastructure is, what kind of level of connectivity it offers in every corner of our state. And they're doing quite a bit of work, both survey work as well as working with the providers, to understand where broadband already exists and at what level, as well as where we do not have connectivity at all, and then everything in between.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I think I learned about them at one of Heather's symposia.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And so good. They're doing some of this fetching of data mm-hmm. for you. And there is, as I understand it, when you look at the federal plan, they understand that sooner or later it comes down to individual satellite dishes. And now we're hearing from this guy outside of Fairbanks, oh, there's problems with these.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess having been around when satellites were the only option, they're not perfect, but they're a very good solution for many parts of Alaska which are not reachable by fiber for sure, or in some cases microwave networks, although I think we'll see expansion of terrestrial facilities. And there is actually a program which makes it available, and I'm sure Jim can say more about this, but provides an opportunity for people who don't have access to the kind of connectivity that Craig was describing or is available in Anchorage and some other areas to get a free satellite dish and discounted satellite service. I actually have used facilities like this in a rural area before, and sure, everybody would like to not have the delay going back and forth to the satellite, but actually they work pretty well if you can get the system set up right. So Jim can probably say more about how people could apply for this while they're since not everyone's going to be able to wait for fiber to come to their doorstep.
Heather, you did just a great job there of timing things so people had time to go fetch a pencil.
Steve, this is Jim again. I wish I had the information right in front of me, but I can tell you this, that part of also what Alaska received in terms of Stimulus Act funding was $1 million that went to HughesNet and $6 million that went to SpaceNet for satellite interconnectivity. The program, and since SpaceNet is the entity that has gotten the lion's share of the money, the SpaceNet Starband system, I think listeners might be familiar with that. I will give you my email address again so I can, anybody's welcome to email me directly and I will get them connected up with that. Again, that's jim.nordland, N-O-R-D-L-U-N-D at A-K. USDA.gov. What's being offered by SpaceNet is a free satellite dish installed on your home, then one, I believe it's 1 or 2 years of a relatively low subscription fee. I think it's $40 a month, and then after that, I'm not sure where that rate would go, but in any case, it does allows people to get a sense of what it's like to be connected to the internet, exactly. and what the advantages are, and whether or not it's something they want to continue.
I gotta say, so you're old enough to remember the expression "first one's free."
Yeah, right.
Starband.com/Alaska or 800-296-5818. The Starband people came and talked to us at the university and at ISER about how to get the word out, and I think the word isn't still completely out. So
this is
for individuals who are in locations where there isn't an alternative to get at least the equipment free. You're quite right, the equipment package and installation, which is interesting and which will be done apparently by local contractors. But anyway, the equipment is there and the prices are discounted. So as getting started and getting something that's, believe me, better than dial-up. I can speak from experience working on a rural farm using satellite broadband. It's a great step up. It's not perfect, but it's a great step in the right direction.
Bill Popp by telephone, anything you want to throw in at this point?
Well, I think the broadband task force, stepping back to that topic, is very focused on trying to develop this plan over the next year. We've got a lot of work that we need to do to understand what the opportunities are. We've had quite a bit of information already come our way in regards to either ongoing efforts or proposed efforts that can range everywhere from what GCI is doing with the Terra project and their next phase, which they don't have the funding for, but definitely is a game plan for continuing that effort to the north, as well as bigger picture projects like the Arctic Link over-the-top fiber line that would stretch from London to Shanghai through the Northwest Passage and would have a component that would put in fiber along the west coast of Alaska and would loop through to the existing infrastructure that's already in Alaska, connecting us to the lower 48 as a secondary backup, but would provide some tremendous opportunity for coastal region of the state, the northern region of the state, as well as the major population centers because of the incredible reduction in latency that project could offer and the connectivity to the major business and financial centers of the world, both in North America as well as Asia and Europe. Big project, $1.9 billion proposed price tag that they're out working to generate the funding for, but something that we need to incorporate into our thinking in terms of what it is that we're trying to do in developing this broader plan for bringing Alaskans fully into the global community of broadband.
Wow, yeah. There is a need for an overview, and that would be definitely be a game changer. But it wouldn't be the first one. I mean, they've happened over and over again. As a matter of fact, GCI was a game changer. Craig, if I could ask you, what's the expansion plan that GCI would like to do?
Sure. So you note that Terra Southwest is the Southwest region.
Oh.
And there is a bigger plan in going to the Northwest up from the endpoint of this network, which is up around Grayling. And then getting from there with a series of continuing microwave towers into the Nome region, up into Kotzebue region, and then tying it back into the existing fiber optics that comes down the pipeline corridor. And so what that ultimate vision really gives us is a ringed network for a majority of rural communities, and gets up into Nome and Kotzebue for the same services that Southwest is going to be providing down here.
All right. Thank you. Our telephone number, 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. And Tom joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska. Tom, thanks for holding on.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. I appreciate it. As you know, I'm interested in renewable energy, and one of the things I've been researching is the ability to put large amounts of power over optical cable. Something like 6 gigawatts of power can go through one square centimeter cross-section cable. So we're talking about prices here, so why don't we split the cost of the cable between data and power all of rural Alaska through an optical cable.
Holy mackerel, what a concept, Tom. Craig, have you heard that one before?
Yes, actually, my previous life, I worked with Denali Commission for the last 10 years and tried to provide some solutions for the power challenges in rural communities. And so we've looked at all kinds of things in connecting communities. But this, you know, this network itself, Terra Southwest, is very much a telecommunications network. It has no ability to provide power. It's fiber optic light going through that fiber, and then the microwave obviously is point-to-point communication. But the caller's exactly right that long-term solutions for rural Alaska is interconnecting communities and regions and trying to solve the energy crisis.
Tom, thanks for that question. Data only. I'm gonna cut you off because I got bunch of other ones. Tom, thanks a lot for your call, though. Let's go to Vince in Denver, Colorado. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Vince.
Thanks. Hey, just in kind of watching and viewing what's going on in the rural U.S., the topic I think you were talking about earlier, the mapping, seems to be something of continued delay for reasons that I guess I just don't get. I know there was the money that was allocated for this, and it was due back in February, and you're talking about mapping. What's the plan for the mapping to be done in rural Alaska so that the right plans can be made to lay the cables to bring everybody onto the internet?
Wow. Very informed question there. Bill Pop, do you want to take that one, or should I throw that one to Heather?
Well, or if we're speaking of mapping broadband connectivity, the activity is actually ongoing, and quite a bit of work has already been accomplished and is in the public arena. If you go to the connectak.org website, you'll find significant opportunities to take a look at the mapping data that they've already gathered and have put in GIS layers available for anybody to take a look at, and that the providers are already taking both a participatory opportunity. They're providing a lot of the data. The last major provider just came on board, and that data is being incorporated, and we're expecting a lot of good, solid mapping to be done, I believe, within the next few months that will pretty much tell the story across the state, which will then allow us as a broadband task force to provide some very significant planning efforts that we can put forth in terms of looking at the options for those regions, making recommendations as far as prioritizations, things along that line. But the mapping itself is very near to conclusion.
Vince?
No, thank you. I think, the mapping goes hand in hand with some government funding, so that's why I think it's such a critical
point. There's one other point from a researcher's point of view to add here. I think that in addition to getting the data from all the providers, as Bill was pointing out, and as each state's trying to do, getting reliable information about. So how well does that connect? What is that connectivity out there, and how well does it work? Is tricky, and the FCC is really trying to get users involved, kind of what you might call crowdsourcing. So you can go on websites and put in data yourself. Well, what is my connection like where I am? It's one thing to say Company X says
they
this is
this?
What they're offering. They're
FCC,
trying to get and connect
for this?
Alaska. Yes, and
really?
the idea is that you can do a test and tell them what it's like where you are, because if we, you know, as with any kind of data collection at the state or federal level, there's only a finite amount of people and money to do it. So if people themselves can help contribute so that we know what's really working out there, as well as what are we being told is now available. So
wow.
I think you'll see more kind of research that involves getting the users themselves to contribute to this ongoing process and making these documents really living for the future. So if we make an investment, as we're hearing now, so what kind of improvement does that make in terms of what's really available out there? And then there's getting to the point beyond the mapping, of the planning, as Bill was saying, and the benefits. You know, the purpose of the exercise, what difference does that really make in rural areas? And I think that's really going to be critical to try to understand as well.
All right, thank you. That's Heather Hudson of the University of Alaska Anchorage Institute of Social and Economic Research as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from The Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com. Check the status of your application at pfd.alaska.gov. August 31st is the deadline for placing half in a college savings account and to add or change charitable donations. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
It is Talk of Alaska, and this is one of those shows that, man, it's like we need a platform and just let this thing just continue. And it could probably go on for months, and we'd be dragging it around, because there's just so much to be said about communications capacity in the state of Alaska. We got this from Ann Evans of SpaceNet, and we'll be glad to come on and talk about our our situation of getting the dishes out to people. So that's good, and I'm glad you're listening, Ann. And indeed, there's many, many directions we could go. We've got Bill Popp of the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation and chairman of the Governor's Task Force on Broadband Telecommunications with us. We've got Jim Nordlund of the Department of Agriculture's Office of Rural Development here in Alaska. Heather Hudson of the University of Alaska Anchorage, ICER, and Craig Johnson of GCI. So we got a highly qualified panel with us. And we have Mickey joining the program from Lake Minchumina. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Mickey.
Hi, thanks for having me on. I just like to say that Minchumina is not on the road system, and we don't have barge or ferry service. Our internet access is primarily at our local library. I don't have it in my own home. Our post office is on the list for possible closure. It's one of 25 off-road post offices on this list. If we lose our post office, we're probably going to lose half of our population and our power company, and that will lead to the loss of our phone and internet connections, making broadband and any other improvements completely moot.
Yeah. What about the school? Is there any school there, or how do you work that?
We have no school. The children are all homeschooled, and internet is an important part of that, but we also get our educational materials through the post office as well.
And the library and the post office are co-located, or how's that work?
Yes, the library and the post office are located in the same building, and it's pretty much dependent on the post office being there, providing rent and power.
Yeah. Do you know if your library is going to be one of those participating in the OWL situation?
It is. It is participating in that, and they are in putting in the broadband even right now. So we are really hoping that we don't lose it all. It might all go for nothing.
Well, we can hope. I should just point out, coming back to what was said at the beginning of the program about the 70s, there's still a policy on the books in Alaska that says every permanent community of at least 25 residents must have telephone service. That's not broadband, but it's phone service. And one of the goals I think that the Broadband Task Force probably is looking at is, you know, what kind of criteria for broadband access in terms of population centers or demographic characteristics might there be to develop definitions. But the phone service should stay. Plus, if you have a school,
it should
that
stay.
Should
they
stay.
They just rejiggered the Universal Service Fund, so I think that there's a lifeline service in there now. Mickey, that just happened.
We don't have a school. Our population of permanent residents is 13, although there's about 50 that come and go seasonally. And I'm just not sure how any of that would work. It really hinges on our power company. We could lose that altogether.
Yeah. Amen. Mickey, thanks. Thanks for singing the blues from Lake Minchumina.
Okay, thanks.
All right. Let's go to Mickey. Brett joins the program from Palmer. Welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Hi there. Thanks. I just wanted to call in and let your listeners know that I'm a project manager for a broadband project that the Metsubara School District has with MTA, and we are currently putting in a fiber network to 45 campuses around the Metsubara, and we are doing it in three phases, so a third of the schools will be completed this summer, a third next summer, and the final third the following summer. And our goal is to get 1 gigabit of throughput from our admin building to every school that's out there, and then all the schools will congregate at our admin building for another big pipe out to the internet. And the nice thing about this project is that it's being paid for in part by a federal subsidy from the government called E-Rate, Education Rate, that pays a portion of our bills to MTA. And much of the rest of it is coming from a state grant from the legislature that was in the capital budget that the governor just passed.
Wow.
And the end result is that a lot of the areas of our valley that didn't have fiber to them or broadband to them will benefit by MTA having to bring it out to that school neighborhood.
Yeah,
absolutely. And that will allow the private citizens to have a better connection back to MTA's center of operations.
Yeah, Brett, thanks for contributing to the program. We're running out of time, so I got to say goodbye.
Sure, thank you.
Thank you so much for the update from the Matsu School District. I remember when they put in their first broadband.
Yeah, I think that's important about how the schools can be so-called anchor tenants that, you know, draws the investment out there, and then, as he said, local residents can benefit as well.
Yeah, I want to thank the three of you for being with us. Bill Pop, we got just about half a minute here. I thought I'd let you have the last word because you have the best radio voice of the bunch.
Thanks, Steve. Well, you know, the Broadband Task Force is going to continue its efforts in the next coming months. It's our hope to have some preliminary results, which we will want to take out to communities around the state, regional communities, to have a discussion to further refine it based on the work product that we deliver and present in draft form. And it's our hope to have our overall planning process completed in 2012.
All right. Thanks a lot, Bill Pop. Thanks, Jim Nordland, Heather Hudson, Craig Johnson. And thanks to Heather Orono. Thanks to Josh Edge. And thanks to Dave Waldron. I'm Steve Heimel. Thanks for listening.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company, and by Alaska Business Monthly Magazine, providing insight on statewide business and government issues. There's more information online at akbizmag.com. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health, and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.